Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and unfortunately the sun forgot to come out today, but don't worry, because we're going to be hot and cold. You're going to just love this book. We've got the author of The Rest of Our Lives and Ice on Fire. Once you figure out what the title means, you are going to sizzle and freeze. Ha! And we've got Colin McKenna and Aidan Gallagher back again, my two favorite hot elemental witches who fell in love. And wait till you find out more about them and what happens when Aidan has some vision. So we're going to welcome Dan Stone. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Fran. I'm great. How are you today?
Okay. And this book was really great. I loved it. And
thank you.
Well, you have to understand that there are days that I read, it could take 5 hours to read something. And then there are days that when I picked up this book, I go, okay, I just sat down and read it, which gave me ice cream, which is a good thing. Yeah.
That is a good thing.
It's good and bad, yeah. So could you give everyone a short summary of The Rest of Our Lives and the backstory about how these two hot guys met?
Sure, I'd be glad to. The original book, The Rest of Our Lives, is a love story, primarily, and it's a love story between two young men who happen to be witches, elemental witches, to be precise, which means that they each have some pretty extraordinary abilities to command the elements either of ice or fire. Mm. And that really is also sort of a metaphor for the two of them in terms of their personalities as well, because they are, for the most part, polar opposites in most respects in terms of temperament and their background, their abilities. So it's a love story about opposites attracting. And in their case, it is also a love story about two people who, after they meet and fall in love, also discover that they've apparently been reincarnating with each other for centuries, meeting and falling in love and meeting and falling in love and meeting and falling in love many, many times, and never quite getting it right. They have not had happy endings in their previous go-rounds, and so they recognize that they're back for another round, and they are determined that they're going to try to get it right this time.
That is amazing. Where did you come up with the premise for this book? How did you come up with the idea for that?
It was really just sort of an evolving process. You know, the whole book really started with the idea of fire and ice and characters who would sort of embody or personify those two extremes. And so that's all I had to begin with. The rest just sort of emerged pretty spontaneously as I just kind of sat with that idea and wondered about what that would look like and how that would be expressed in characters and in a connection with each other. And honestly, I say this to pretty much anybody who asks me about this book or these characters, it was like they really just sort of showed up and started to kind of reveal themselves to me. I never really felt like I was making it up or inventing them, really. I know that sounds just a tiny bit schizophrenic, but that's how I experienced the process. They really just sort of came to life for me initially and started to show and tell me who they were and what they were about, and I just took it from there.
Well, but one emits fire, can make you heat, which is cool. The other one, my favorite, makes you cold. So how did you decide those two elemental powers, and how did they work when on? I think Aidan seems to be the one that's more powerful than Colin. He seems to be the one that, you know, takes over. He's got a wild personality. You never know what he's going to do. which is really cool.
Well, he certainly has the more dominant personality.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I mean, if you, I hope that each character really does sort of embody the idea or the concept of his respective element. And so, since Aiden is the embodiment of fire, yes, he is the, I don't know if I would say more powerful, but he is certainly mm-hmm. the more, well, fiery. And
yeah.
So his abilities allow him to control fire and heat and motion. And so he is certainly the active principal in the two, whereas Calm is more of the receptive principal, his abilities having to do with creating the opposite of what Aiden creates, which is stillness in Calm's case. So he creates the absence of motion, freezes, if you will, motion, and then also commands the element of ice and so can create cold where Aiden creates fire. But in my view, the way that I see the two of them, they're actually fairly evenly matched. I don't know that I would say one is more powerful than the other. One is certainly more active and tends to dominate more than the other. And yet it is the one who is less active and less dominant who is the narrator of both books. So we come to know them through Calm and his perspective, not Aiden's.
Which really is a very interesting way to use voice in a story. It is different. But you can tell Calm's insecurities, too, at times, too, because he worries every time Aiden disappears from his sight, sort of. So who is Aunt Lou? I like her. And why does she become a central figure in their lives?
Well, she is Aiden's aunt. Part of the backstory for these two characters is that both of them lost their mothers at birth. So they are both orphans, essentially. And part of the lineage, part of the tradition for both of them in terms of their family and their lineage is that they're a pivotal generation in their family lineage. And so the death of each of their mothers is sort of part of their destiny, which they come to understand as time goes on. They were both raised by aunts who were their mother's sisters. In Aiden's case, Aunt Lou is the woman who raised him and taught him about his heritage and taught him how to use his abilities and develop them and gave him a great deal of his confidence and his self-awareness and really provided a very stable and loving and encouraging upbringing for him, whereas Calm didn't have that advantage. He didn't really have much of a connection with his aunt who raised him. In fact, they were fairly estranged for most of his life. And so a lot of his insecurities, a lot of the things that make him hold back or have sort of created this rather reserved, uncertain take on the world really stems from the fact that he did not have anybody there to create that same sort of stable, loving, and supportive childhood.
So it makes it kind of hard. But you, in this particular book, which I found kind of interesting, very interesting, is that Aiden has a dream about Calm's mother, and he has a dream about his. How come you included both mothers in this particular one, and in what way?
In the new book, they both have these dreams or visions where the other, where each other's mothers appear to them. You know, it just sort of made sense because the basic premise of the second book is that these guys are in the process of learning that part of what's expected of the two of them is to preserve their lineage. And so these are two young gay men. they're finding out that there's this expectation that they're going to somehow manage to continue their respective family lines. And they get this information from their mothers, which just sort of made sense to me. Calm's mother actually appears in the first book in some dreams that he has and has been having for most of his life. So in a way, it was also sort of a continuation of that. And this time, Aiden's mother appearing as well, because they are the ones delivering this message to them that there's this expectation that these guys are going to find some way to preserve their family line. And that sort of sets the stage for most of the conflict or the plot in the second book.
Yeah, it does. It's interesting. So I was waiting to see what you were going to do with that. Okay, so we've got Hank, right? And what is his part? He's quirky, isn't he? He's wild and cute, Hank.
Yeah.
I liked him.
Yeah,
I liked him.
Hank,
I got like, yeah, okay, this guy's really cool.
You know, he showed up toward the end of the first book as sort of a peripheral character, and yet he was also somewhat pivotal in terms of the effect that he had on Calm when the two of them met and began to interact. And so I knew before I finished writing the first book that Hank would figure much more prominently in the second one. And I think it was just because he, as I began to write him, he just showed up as this really colorful, funny, fun, very likable fellow. And there was an interesting connection between him and Calm, and I thought that was worth exploring further.
Yeah, and the other one didn't like that either. Too bad. Well, you got to have a little conflict, a little jealousy. I mean, you can't always have a happy relationship. That would kill it, right? So,
sure.
Calm, which I really, I wish I could do this. Seriously? I don't think I want the heat. I think I want the cold. If you can give me some of that. I mean, seriously. When I get aggravated, I would like to freeze the world. It would be really cool. So why does he go off on a frigid pan?
I think we've all felt that way.
Yeah, I think I know. Lately, I've been feeling very frustrated, and I'm going like, I wish I could freeze the people that are aggravating me and the cause of it. And that would be really cool to have this power. So why does he go off and get out of control at times? What sets him off? He's so good, though. I like him.
I think for Colm, it always sort of comes back around to his insecurities. And he is.
Yeah.
He's an insecure fellow. I mean, it's just another part of the opposing sort of dynamic between these two characters as well. And so whereas Colm has these pretty dramatic insecurities, and they do get the better of him sometimes, Aiden tends to overcompensate and be, rather not just self-assured and self-confident, but sometimes kind of cocky and arrogant. And so some of that is a reaction in terms of just the two extremes that they each represent. But also for Calm, he is the narrator of both these books. And so in addition to the books being a love story and being the story of these two people and how they come together and what their lives are about, it is also in some important respects Calm's story. It's his journey of self-discovery. It's him because he's the one speaking, because we hear his voice and we see things through his eyes. We're coming to understand where he's come from, what he's been about, what he's struggled with, what he continues to struggle with. And so even though both these books are about the relationship between these two characters, both these books are also about Calm and about how he evolves. And so, yeah, he can lose it sometimes when those insecurities are triggered, and nobody triggers them like Aiden.
I think Aiden does it on purpose, though. I think he likes to do it. I got that. But I can't wait to see if you do a third and fourth, and you better do a third and fourth, because you know what? I got hands out for this, by the way, in case you're wondering. I have the book in front of me, and I was telling some people about it. I got a whole bunch of hands out for this, that they want the copy of
awesome.
The book. I said, buy it. I was, like, thrilled. They go, like, yeah, finally people to read something that's worth reading, because I've been getting a lot of stuff that, oh, my God, is so sad. And I said, you're going to really love this. So I got a half a dozen hands out, and they said, only one copy. I'm afraid you're going to have to buy the other five by yourself.
That's really great.
Yeah, it is. It's great. There's a lady in the bakery that I go to that gets all my books, and I was telling her about this one. So, Patty, this one's for you. You're going to love it. So why did they go? Why did they go to Vegas, and who were they looking for? And the best was, I wish I could do this too, was the plane ride. They could do things that no one else could do. Oh, I wish I could do that too.
I was actually really surprised that they ended up in Vegas. When I started writing the second book, that was about the farthest thing from my mind. But they end up there because, as we were talking about earlier, part of what they discover pretty early on in the second book is that they are expected in some way to preserve their respective lineages.
Yeah.
And so the way that starts to play out, what they start to recognize is that there's some expectation that they're gonna have the baby somehow. They need to have a child. There needs to be a child who continues the bloodline for their two families. And that raises all kinds of questions and all kinds of complications because, again, these are two gay men involved with each other. So they've got to figure out, you know, okay, how's that going to work? If the expectation is that each of our respective bloodlines must be preserved, okay, what does that look like? How do we make that happen? And so part of what also comes sort of into awareness is they have these visions and these dreams and these visitations from their mothers and begin to talk about it and angst about it. there's also this vision of this, excuse me, of this young woman. You know, there's a description of her. There's sort of just some vague ideas of this young woman who is showing up in some dreams and visions as somehow important or central to this emerging conflict about how they're going to preserve the family line. And so, it just sort of slowly evolves that there could be this person out there somewhere who's important for how this is supposed to play out. And of course, they receive all kinds of psychic information from different sources about who she is and where she is, and they learn that apparently she's in Las Vegas, and so she's a member of Aiden's family. She's a distant relative of Aiden's. So they begin to gather all this information, and it becomes apparent to them that, okay, for some reason, this young woman is important in what it is we're supposed to be doing and what we're supposed to be figuring out, and so we need to go find her. And she's in Las Vegas, and so that's where they go.
Well, I think the coolest part, you know, we all do book signings, right? Some of us do. And they were late. And this was hilarious. They're running to the book signing, and they take a quick cab ride, and the poor driver never knew what hit him. How did you come up with that? I wish, I swear, between the freezing and all of it, and the plane ride that they stopped everything, and the cab ride, I wish I could do that too. Like, you know, okay, I'm there. How did you come up? I mean, really, that is so cool.
Well, thank you. When the book opens, the second book, it's 2 years, roughly 2 years after the first book has ended. And so they've been together for a couple of years. Part of what they've done in the 2 years that they've been together, that they've been a couple, is that they've written a book together. And in the first book, we learn that Aiden is a writer, a travel writer specifically, who's very successful, has traveled all over the world, writes articles and books, and is very well known and respected for his accomplishments and his skills. Colm is a photographer, and so they come together not only as a couple but as a team working together, and they create this book. And when the second book opens, the two of them are on a book tour promoting this book that they've written with each other. So that's the context in which the second book sort of opens or begins, and we start to visit with them again. And yes, it's been 2 years, and so these are young men with extraordinary abilities, as we've talked about. They're witches. They're magical. Mm-hmm. And as they've come together, they're learning that they can not only do all kinds of amazing things individually, but they can do even more amazing things together when they combine their powers, focus their energies together in different ways. And one of the things that they have learned that they can do, and they're just beginning to learn about this as the second book opens, is that when they merge their magic with each other, merge Aiden's ability to create motion, merge Colm's ability to stop time, they can actually go back and forth in time. They can speed time up. Particularly, they can accelerate time when they combine their energies that way. And so the scene that you're referring to is when they are late for a book reading and they decide to try this, and they're kind of new at it. They haven't been doing this for very long. So yes, they're in a cab. They're running late. They decide to do this particular kind of magic together. And so what they're able to do is sort of speed time up considerably. And basically, it's a little bit of a time warp that they create through that merging of their energies. And a trip that could have taken them an half an hour or an hour takes them like 2 minutes. And so, yes, boom, they're at their destination.
That's so cool. That is so cool. I think there's everyone in the world that's in Manhattan or anything that's ever been in traffic would love to have the power to be able to do that, to speed time up so that they're not late. So if you could bottle that and put it in a magic machine, that would be really cool.
I know, right?
So why did they had to go back in time in order to find out how many lives they've lived? That is so cool. Wouldn't it be great to be able to reincarnate yourself and just live a better life or a different life than who you are? And what role did Hank play in that? I love that guy. He's so cool.
Well, they do come to the first book is largely about the things that they learn about their previous lifetimes together. And so, yes, there's a lot of information that comes to them about previous incarnations and what those looked like and what their relationship was like. And that's how they learned that in their previous lifetimes, things didn't usually go very well. You know, there were lots of problems and not any real happy endings. And so they learn all about that in the first book. In the second book, they do continue to get more information about that. And yes, since Hank is now a much more central character in the second book, they begin to see that, oh, well, yeah, he's been around with us too. So in other words, you know, if you really read very much about reincarnation, many people do sort of hold to the idea that that we tend to travel in groups. Some people call that idea sort of a soul group. And so there is this idea that many people hold that, you know, not only do we experience multiple lifetimes, that, you know, we like to keep coming back because it's part of our growth as a soul, but we tend to come back with the same people. You know, in other words, we have a group that we like to hang out with. And we tend to continue to hang out with that group, you know, over and over again, play different roles, learn different things. And so that's kind of the idea behind what Colm and Aiden are discovering. And certainly makes sense that they would discover that Hank has been part of that history with them as well.
I would like to come back as a rich philanthropist to help people. That's what I do as a book reviewer.
That would be so nice,
that,
wouldn't it?
That would be really, really nice. So I don't want to get into too many of the characters because I don't want to give away too much, but I the funniest thing, I was in the jewelers yesterday, and I asked the girl to please get me another bracelet with the evil eye on it, and your character is the evil eye. So who is evil eye, and why did his grandmother tell him about her? Yeah, and I actually had a bracelet with a whole bunch of evil eyes, and I broke it, so I want another one, because it does ward off bad things. I don't know why, but it just does. Seriously.
Well, that reference in the second book, I think, is made by Aunt Lou, I believe. It's one of the conversations that the four of them are having. And if I remember correctly, it's in the context of them talking about this this young woman who they've come to Las Vegas to find, whose name is Rune.
Yeah, she was
They're there in Las Vegas. They're looking for her. They're finding out more and more about her, even though they haven't met her yet. And one of the things that they find out about her is she's also a witch because she's part of Aiden's family. Mm-hmm. She's a distant cousin of Aiden's. And so she's also a witch, and so they're learning more about her. And part of what they learn about her, not from her directly, but from, you know, the other sources of information that they have about her, is that her power is apparently to be able to control or manipulate probabilities. So, in other words, she has this ability to alter the outcome of things in ways that are not statistically likely. So when Rune's around, things go wrong, basically. That's kind of how that is best summarized, because her energy sort of creates this chaotic, unexpected result in whatever situation she exerts her energy into. And so Aunt Lou is actually the one sort of talking about this, because she understands that ability. She's seen it before. And so she's explaining to Colm and Aiden and Hank that particular ability has in the past been referred to as the evil eye, because it's somebody sort of casts a hex or something, you know, looks at somebody a certain way and bad things happen. And so Hank hears that, and it just reminds him of an experience he had when he was growing up, and of somebody who lived near them, and his grandmother, who raised him, was sort of warning him to stay away from that person because bad things happened when that person looked at you. So that's what Hank is. It's really just an experience in Hank's past that he's sharing. In relation to the information that they're receiving about this new character and what she can do.
Well, it sort of like fits the name Rune. She runes things.
Well, yeah, and that's Hank's take on it, although that's not how it's spelled. Her name is actually spelled R-U-N-E.
I know. That is amazing.
But
if you think about it, she runes everything. Yeah. So,
how
did you create? We don't want to give away too much more about this book, because people, you want to read it seriously. And while you're reading it, get yourself, you know, there were times when you could feel the scenes were so beautifully depicted and so perfectly described that when Colm was going off on his ice tinge, I had to put a coat on. And then when Aiden was doing the fire on him, I got warm. Which is rare because you don't normally feel the emotion and the heat. And you did such a great job explaining it. And let me tell you something, guys and girls and everybody. The scenes are really hot, but they're tasteful. Because what happens
is sometimes when you
have certain types of scenes, I skip over them and go like, I don't want to read that. That's horrible. That's too much. It's too graphic. But they're so different in their emotions. And then when one decides to heat up the other and freeze the other one, it's so cool. But, I got cold. I said, like, oh, my God. And I really wish I could have Calm's power, because there are a lot of people I would like to freeze and make cold and make me feel so much better. Yeah. So if you had to, how did you, the cover is fantastic. I mean, I know that Aiden is on the left and Calm's on the right. How did you come up with that cover? Who created that? It's great. It says it all.
The cover artist for the new book for Ice on Fire, his name is Matt Creswell, wonderfully brilliant artist who has created some amazing book covers for other authors through my publisher at Lefty Press. Matt's just he's a really talented, gifted artist. And so, no, I didn't have a whole lot to do with that. Matt created the concept. I did work with him and my publisher, to offer some suggestions, sort of fine tuning it a little bit. The thing that I wanted most for the cover for the second book was for it to really try to capture the essence and the energy of the book. And so, whereas the cover for the first book was sort of more whimsical and kind of lighthearted and fun, the cover for the second book has much more intensity, which I felt was more true to the energy of the book and the story in the second book. These characters in the second book, they've been together for 2 years. They're growing. Their relationship is evolving. They, as is always true in any relationship, over time, they're facing challenges and conflicts, as well as continuing to explore the ways their energies come together. And so that was a big part of it. That's part of the reason for the title, as well as for the concept for the cover, which was just brilliantly executed by Matt Creswell.
Oh, I wish I could get him to do the cover for my new Faces book that's going to come out soon. I have to tell you that I read Murder on Faux Pas Island from your publisher. They didn't recognize it. I did post it all over the place. The book is hilarious. It's absolutely one of my favorite murder mysteries, and the characters are hilarious. You have to read it to believe it. I loved it. And right now I'm reading of the Glitz Squad, a group of drag queens that are hired to change the world, and they're going to go against a super villain or something. And I started that the other day, and I go like, oh, this is great too. Everything they sent me is great. The only one I haven't gotten through is Comrade in Arms, because it's a bunch of stories about different veterans and war heroes and stuff, so it's kind of heavy. So I'm taking my time on that one, but I am reading them, and don't think I'm not
That's great. So many talented authors and wonderful books come out of Lefty Press. I can't say enough good things about the quality of material that is continually produced through that publisher. So, yeah, I really encourage anyone who loves to read, certainly loves to read gay or lesbian fiction, romance, erotic fiction, nonfiction, science fiction, fantasy, those kinds of titles, just so well represented at Lefty Press.
I was pleasantly surprised, because I really wasn't sure, because the cover was like pink and black and outrageous. And I opened it up and I go, she's like, oh my God, this character is fantastic. And the story was so funny. And I go like, is she going to solve the murder, or are they going to just like die on the cruise, whatever, on the island? And I'm going like, she's going to get them, or is she not going to get them, or he, whatever. And
kept you guessing.
I just absolutely loved it. It was one of those books that gave me eye strain again, which is not a good thing, which is a good thing, sort of, you know. So why does Colin, like you said, feels insecure, and at times he fights his own fears? So when you created the hot and freezing scenes between them, which ones were the most fun to create? Because they were all good, and I want to learn how to do it.
That's a hard question to answer. I, I, You know, I honestly think that, my favorite love scene between the two of them is, well, probably a toss-up between the first time they were together. Well, geez, now I'm thinking of two more that I really like. I was going to say, the first time that they're together that way, which was just so important to the, you know, to the story in the first book and everything that came after it. I also love the their first love scene in the second book, or it's one of the first ones where they're on the boat, they're on the ship, the Spirit of Chicago, and decide to Calm basically freezes the boat, and Aiden creates all these fireworks, and it's kind of a fun scene. But then later in the book, I also love when they do start to sort of spontaneously in the middle of their of getting it on, they spontaneously start to time travel.
Yeah.
And so they're I think they call it, I forget the term I use, but some sort of like cosmic or supernatural edging, where they just keep bringing each other to the brink, and then they go back, and they come back, and they bring each other to the brink again, and then they go back, and it's over and over and over. I mean, it sounds both amazingly exhilarating and also kind of exhausting.
Well, I think there are a lot of people out there that should read those scenes, because you can get the, you know, the edge back in your boring life. And, it could get some spark on one side and some cold on the other. For those of you that, you know, need a little fire and ice in your relationship, that was good. They just came up with
They're
that.
They're really into each other.
Yeah, I know. They are really into each other, which, you know, like, you wrote the books and you created the plot line. Did you create the plot line first or the steamy scenes first? Or did it just come together, sort of?
The characters were what were developed first. And yes, everything just kind of followed from that. So I spent a lot of time in the early, very early phases of writing the first book, just getting to know the characters. And so I would make pages and pages of notes about both of them. Lots of information that never even made it into the book about the two of them. And then once I felt like they had pretty much revealed who they were and what they were about, then it really did just become this process of kind of showing up whenever I would sit down to write and letting them show or tell me what they wanted, what was happening, what was going to happen. Sounds, I know, a little strange in terms of a writer's process, but I didn't use any sort of outline. I didn't create or outline the story arc for either book. I never even really honestly felt like I invented any of the characters. They just literally showed up. And when they showed up pretty fully. So it was it was almost like watching a movie, and I just wrote down what I saw.
So if they were standing in front of you, this is a tough one, what would you picture Colm looking like, and what would you picture Aiden looking like? If you didn't have the graphic artist, what would you think that they would, if they appeared on the street, you would know them, right? You would know them if they were walking together?
Oh, yes, absolutely. They are... you know, for me, I visualize them more in terms of their energies than their literal physical appearance. So, you know, I mean, even though I have described both of them in some detail at various points in both books, I mean, you know, the reader is given a fairly specific visual image of what each one looks like, and you know, in terms of their coloring and their build and stature and so forth. I don't go into in any more detail than that, because I really want the reader to be able to picture them as he or she needs to or wants to. So what's more specific about each one of them is his energy. I do think that they're both fairly striking individuals in terms of how they look physically. So in other words, they're both guys that most of us would enjoy looking at, even if they're not necessarily, you know, sort of conventionally or traditionally gorgeous. You know, I don't know that either one of them would necessarily be what we would expect to see on the cover of a magazine, but they are striking and compelling people, both in terms of their appearance and their energy.
Well, before I forget, because I don't want to forget, Thursday we're going to have a panel show. I'm not sure if John Land is going to make it, but Larry Thompson, Marilyn Levinson, and Stephen Schwarzerly. And we're going to talk about the villain, and Mark Rubenstein, the villain in your book. If your villain was killed off in the last book, and you could, he wants to come back because he's not really quite dead yet, what would he do next? What would be his next thing to do to protagonist? And how would he get even for all the evil that they did to get him to put him away? And we're going to talk about how you create your villain and why maybe he might not lose next time. On Monday, we've got New York Times bestselling author Philip Margolin, Violent Crimes, and you're going to learn quite a number of definitions of that word. And Vincent Zandri on the 3rd, Orchid Grove, and quite a number of other people the entire month that I'll announce on Thursday. You never know who's going to come on this show, but this is great. This book is fantastic. So for those of you that, you know, haven't read any of Dan Stone, you should really start at the beginning, The Rest of Our Lives, and then read Ice on Fire. But more quick questions. When you decided on the plot line, what are you planning to do next for these two? You are going to bring them back. You have to. You have no choice. Really, seriously.
Well, I actually feel like I don't have much choice, because when you get to the end of the second book, I think it is relatively clear that the story is not over. And a lot of questions were raised in the second book. A lot of issues were brought up that were not completely or resolved at all. And so, yeah, there's at least another round of adventures with the two of them. So I can at least say that much, at least one more.
Well, you've got to have one more because of the lineage stuff. You have to have one more.
Right. You've got
to figure
that out. We
have to see what happens if they succeed or if they don't succeed, what happens to them. Because I said
absolutely,
the ending is great and unique so that only you could create it. And, okay, where can everyone get both of these books and learn more? And I know that you write, do you write poems too, poetry?
I do, yes, I do write poetry. The books are available on Amazon, certainly. So both novels are available on Amazon for purchase, both paperback and Kindle versions. You can also purchase them directly from the publisher at lethepress.com. That's lethepress.com. And certainly anyone is welcome to contact me directly through my website, which is firstadream.com.
I really wish I did contact the publisher for Lethe Press to tell him that I read your book on Facebook, and I did tell him about the other one, but he never responded. And really, Lethe Press, you need to know that the quality of work, and I don't read just anything, and Dan knows that. And when I saw on Facebook that you wrote a new book, you saw I asked for it right away. And to be very honest, I don't ask for anything. To be very honest, it's very rare that I'm going to say to an author, I need to have that now, right now, because I need something to upgrade what I'm reading. And I don't ask for books. I just like, they come at my doorstep. And lately, oh my God, my doorstep needs to be hidden from the world of whatever. But these two
characters. I'm so flattered that you did.
I really, I mean, I enjoyed this. And I have to tell you that, you know, the story the line about the lineage and having children, my cousin Andrea just married her life partner, Nicole, in October. And they're looking into having a child together, too. So that brought the real-life situation in my family to light. And I get that made the book even better to me. Because they're thinking about the same thing, about having a child. I don't know how they're going to go about it or what they're going to do yet, but I can't wait to have another child in the family to spoil, which is really cool. So
well,
we learned about that.
I will say this. You know, nobody was more surprised than I that was the focus of the second book. Because when the first book ended, I had no idea that that's where it would be going for the two of them. And not even something that I'm particularly inclined to write about for myself. But that is just sort of the way that it went. And it was a surprise to me as well as to them.
That's what made it even better, because I said, this is so believable and it's so amazing. And wouldn't it be great if they could be, you know, two fathers, two parents or whatever. So I noticed that on Facebook before we close, just so everybody knows, that not only does Dan write great novels, but those poems that you post, those are the ones that you write?
Yes. Yes, I do.
They're really good.
I'm also a photographer and a visual artist, and I do share a lot of my work on Facebook. That consists of my original images and also original poetry that I usually post with the images. So, yes, that is mine, and I'm planning to probably release a first collection of those images and poems sometime in the very near future.
Good, because I'm going to put you on the spot. I don't know if you're aware that I have my own magazine. It's called MJ Magazine, and it's for readers, writers, authors, publishers. And in the last two editions, I had poetry. The girl that runs my ENT and allergy office, her son, out of nowhere, she said, my son writes dark poems. I go, he's in, first cover, no problem. So the next edition, I'm taking my time. I'm just going really slow with everything. If you have any images, I would love to do an insert in the center of the magazine of all of your artwork. And if you want to put some poetry in, I could make that too and put you on the front
cover.
Awesome.
Thank you so much,
Fran. So whenever you
want
to send them to me, that would be great.
Yes,
if you send it to me at my email address, and I will send it to my favorite publisher in the world, Robin at Fideli Publishing. She's the best, and her artwork is great too. But your cover of this book is so fantastic. Does he do any cover of anybody, or just Lethe Press, your graphic artist?
No, Matt. I think Matt designs for a number of different publishers, and he's a freelancer. So yeah, I think he works with a lot of writers, a lot of different publishers, and also creates is also a writer himself. Has published a good bit of his own material. is a wonderful writer as well as an artist.
Well, that's good, because when my book is finally edited, it's called Faces Behind the Stones, Hidden Truths and Lies, and it's told from the point of view of the dead person that committed a crime behind the stone. It's just my own.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's different. I hope it's good. And it's got several stories, and it's got two science fiction stories that I wrote that are actually, I think, are pretty good. And I'm waiting for my editor to finish editing, because the first one got a little jumbled up, and you have to always rewrite and edit. So I'm excited, and
I can't wait to read it.
I'm going to send it to you to read so I can get some stars, and then you could tell, since you're very good at paranormal and stuff like that, I'm going to give it to some people to read before it comes out, so that
that's a good idea.
I get an idea of where I make, you know, my mistakes or didn't make my mistakes. But you know how you write and you keep writing and you're writing, and then you say, oh my God, that doesn't sound right. Then you write the same thing twice, and the editor says, how come you wrote that twice? I go, I have no clue. My problem is that you probably write and then you correct and read it. Once I write it, it's done. You got to read it and fix it, because I don't want to read it. I can't read on my computer because it drives my eyes crazy. And that's why I only read print copies, people, no Kindle. But this is
great. You know, I actually write the first draft of my novels longhand.
See? My person after my own heart. That's what I did.
That's just my process. I always write the first draft longhand in bound journals, and then when I begin to type the manuscript is my first rewrite or first edit.
That's amazing because I have the worst handwriting in America. I'm very smart.
Oh,
but
it couldn't be as bad as mine.
Yeah,
and that's the worst
day,
thing about that approach is sometimes I can't read what I
read. Yeah, you can't read
so
it.
So I have to go back and make it up.
Well, that was the problem the other day, which I, you know, before I closed, I promised I would do this. If you notice on Facebook, I took my picture off, people. I did. And I put on Davy Fit Bodies, which is my nephew's new gym in Florida, in Davy, Florida. And he's really doing, I'm very, very proud of him. And I said, for those of you, I had to write the logo and everything, and it took me 20 minutes to read what I wrote. So for those of you that are going for paramedic, EMT, running track, marathon, or just want to get in shape so that you don't have the flab hanging over when the summer sun hits the beach, Davy Fit Bodies is really the place to go because I'm thin. And my nephew helps me out when he's up here. And the number is 754-422-4502 and ask for Jason. And if you look at my Facebook wall, you'll see pictures of the gym, pictures of Jason. He's really hot. He's really gorgeous, my nephew, if I do say so myself. And I'm very proud of him because I'm hoping that this is a success because he really needs something positive in his life. But I am so excited that you're going to send me some of your artwork. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put it in the center and your poetry.
Wonderful.
And, yeah, that would be great because I need different people. And send a bio and a picture so that we could put it on the front cover. Put your picture on the front cover.
So, Thank you so much.
And, you know, you are amazing, Dan. And when the poetry collection comes out, poetry collections are easy to do reviews on. They really are. And I like doing them, as long as there's not 700 poems in the book.
Oh, no. No, much smaller collection than that.
Yeah, I've
no,
gotten
I,
some
I'll
with
I'll
my...
make sure that I contact you when it's going to be released.
You have to, because I want to do some, you know, quote for the back cover or whatever you want. That would be really cool. So thank you so much. The sun has been shining, but it did stop raining. That's good. And
awesome.
Thank you so very much, and have a great day, everybody. And
thanks
see you
so much,
Thursday
Fran.
At 10. Thank you. Bye.
Take care.